You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
I thought it'd be timely to just give you a little bit of background to today, what's happening. This morning we'd like to just simply focus on our attention on music, be it a particular piece, song or tune, and poetry. Perhaps there is a poem or a particular piece of music that made a significant impact on you at some stage in your life. So this theme is the basis of much of this morning's service. The importance of music and poetic aspects of art relate well to the second, fourth, sixth and seventh principles of Unitarianism. And at a stretch, I think you'd mostly get to cover the other three as well. In short, it could be said that these aspects are important as integral parts of our spiritual journey. I understand that some poetry may not feature high on the preferred reading agenda of some folk. Some of this attitude might relate to school experiences connected to this dissection of poetry. I wonder if you can remember sitting in class painfully going through metaphors, onomatopoeias, resonance, and all those. I have clear memories of failing to interpret poems correctly or not as the teacher thought they ought to be interpreted. If you had similar experiences to mine, don't tune out, as identifying rhyme and rhythm and other poetic techniques are not in the program this morning. The poems and music that have been chosen are not necessarily favourites of the presenters, but have been chosen to highlight certain aspects of these sections of creative expression.
I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high over vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils, beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze, continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way. They stretched in never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. A poet could not be but gay in such a jocund company. I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills, and dances with the daffodils.
Thank you, Grant. And of course, the title to the poem was I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud by William Wordsworth, but Daffodils is its generic name, I think. So I've titled this morning's address, The Importance of Music and Poetry in Our Lives. And as Jenny mentioned, the passing of that famous opera singer, I think that most of us recognise that the arts play a very important part in our lives. I wonder how much music has played a part in your life, as well as literature, poetry. I think for me, speaking personally, they played a strong part, particularly in dealing with the speed bumps that I have encountered in my life. And I'm sure that there are many of you sitting here the same way. For example, when in quarantine and self-isolation, music played an important part in lifting my spirits, and I know it did the same for Helen. Also, here's another confession coming up now. At Christmas time, both Helen and I loved to listen to Christmas carols. We play them often, and we start early, well before Christmas. And one of our favourite Christmas carols is called Jessie's Carol, and Jessie was a famous operatic singer in America. If you've never heard it, Google it. It's really worth the effort. Although we don't agree with the sentiments expressed in many of the carols, somehow they just touch the core of us, especially when considering the hope of peace in our lives, in our community, and in the wider world. And I don't think that this is a unique experience for us or for anybody. I also record a program every Sunday morning that I listen to sometimes on Sunday afternoon or during the week when I need a bit of a charge. It's called Songs of Praise from the ABC. I don't know if many of you know it. It's always on Sunday mornings. Although I can't subscribe often to the religious sentiments expressed in the hymns, I relate strongly to the tunes. And I guess part of that's because they form such a strong part of my formative years. Our knowledge of history shows us that people have always found music significant in their lives, whether for enjoyment in listening, the emotional response, performing or creating. So said Gilbert Galindo, who is a contemporary award-winning composer. But why is this so? He goes on to say it has been long said that music gives one an emotional response. Characters of varying degree that are found in music can affect one's mood. Music can raise someone's mood, get them excited, or make them calm and relaxed. Music also, and this is important, allows us to feel nearly or possibly all emotions that we experience in our lives. The possibilities are endless, he says. His belief is that the role of arts and music in our society fill a void we all need in order to enrich ourselves and our culture. They provide alternate, infinite experiences, and they also further enhance the skills we use in other disciplines and professions. Recently, the arts have been sneaking into mainstream culture and gaining the attention of viewers through such shows as So You Think You Can Dance, or even by watching American Idol, I guess Australian Idol, or British Idol. Viewers learn how to become critical of musical performance and share strong musical opinions. Well, I wonder how this concept of music relates to psychology. Music can relax the mind, say psychologists, energise the body, and even help people better manage pain. The psychological effects of music can be powerful and wide-ranging. Music therapy is an intervention sometimes used to promote emotional health, help patients cope with stress, and boost psychological well-being. While it may not make us smarter, music does enhance arousal and performance as it positively affects how we feel. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter associated with pleasure, and it's been found that music activated all areas of the brain associated with planning, attention, movement, and memory as dopamine is released. So that's music, and I think we all agree with most of those sentiments. But what about poetry? I always think of poetry, and that's perhaps coming from my own experience, as being a poor cousin of the rest of literature, but it's not necessarily. Most probably this isn't one of the most popular sections of art, but most of us were exposed to this form of literature very early in our development through such things as nursery rhymes. Our four-year-old granddaughter has a passion for rhyming words. Alice Osborne, a singer-songwriter and educator, a contemporary one, and a book editor, who is also the president of the North Carolina Songwriters Co-op, the North Carolina Writers Network and the North Carolina Museum of History, Docent Board, claims poetry is so important because it helps us understand and appreciate the world around us. She says that poetry's strength lies in its ability to shed a sideways light on the world. So the truth sneaks up on us. Poetry teaches us how to live. When considering poetry, you don't have to limit yourself to the likes of Keats, Yeats, Wilfred Owen, or even Emily Dickinson, to name but a few. When preparing this address, I decided to limit my discussion to three poets. The first is Emily Dickinson. I wonder if anybody's been binge-watching Emily Dickinson's story on Apple TV. If you've got access to that, it's really worth it. You'd love it. She lived from December the 10th, 1830, to May 15th, 1886, in America. Fairly turbulent time in the history of that country. And she remained little known throughout her life. She has since been regarded as one of the most important figures in American poetry. During her young adult life, she was introduced to the writings of William Wordsworth, I Wonder Lonely as a Cloud, and received as a gift Ralph Waldo Emerson's first book of collected poems, which had a liberating effect on her. She refused to follow the norm for women at that time, poorly educated, only in the art of keeping a house and finding a good husband and making a good married life. She refused to follow that. Emily Dickinson lived in an age defined by the struggle to reconcile traditional Christian beliefs with newly emerging scientific concepts, the most influential concept of the time being Darwinism. Dickinson's struggles with faith and doubt reflect her society's diverse perceptions of God, nature, and humankind. Raised in a Calvinist household, the young Emily Dickinson attended religious services with her family at the village meeting house. The town that she was living in was Amherst, and the church that they attended was the Amherst First Congregational Church. Congregationalism was the predominant denomination of early New England area of America. She also studied at Amherst College, which was a college for young men only when it was founded in 1821, and it was founded to educate more young men for the Christian ministry, and they didn't allow women into that, of course, at that stage. But she was among the first women to be admitted to the college. During Dickinson's lifetime, the religious landscape diversified to include Methodists, Baptists, Unitarians, and eventually Catholics. The college has such a strong educational record that I just thought I'd give you a background of the type of rigor that she most probably faced when she went in there. It has produced 6 Nobel Prize laureates. It is one of the highest proportions of Nobel laureates among graduates out of any undergraduate institution worldwide. It also included 20 Rhodes Scholars, numerous Pulitzer Prize recipients, MacArthur Fellows, winners of the Academy, Tony, Grammy, and Emmy Awards, a President of the United States, a Justice of the United States, 3 Speakers of the House of Representatives, and notable writers, academics, politicians, entertainers, business people, and activists. So it's a broad range of effect across that nation. It remains one of the most prestigious colleges in New England to this day. And Emily Dickinson fits into this amazing array of brilliant minds, as she is recognised as one of America's greatest poets, although she didn't gain that, as I said before, until after her death. I've chosen 2 examples of her work today. The first poem, simply titled, as many of hers were, just by a number, number 341, deals with pain of grief. After great pain, a formal feeling comes. The nerves sit ceremonious, like tombs. The stiff heart questions, was it he that bore, and yesterday or centuries before? The feet, mechanical, go round, of ground or air or aught, a wooden way, regardless grown, a quartz contentment like a stone. This is the hour of lead, remembered, if outlived, as freezing persons recollect the snow, first chill, then stupor, then letting go. Perhaps her most famous poem is number 254, which is titled "Hope is a Thing with Feathers," and it's gained its reputation across the English-speaking world. It metaphorically describes hope as a bird that rests in the soul, sings continuously, and never demands anything, even in the direst circumstances. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings a tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, a sore must be the storm that would abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me. Simple poems can also have an impact on us, such as these from the American poet Lydie Wilkes. Lydie is a contemporary African-American poet who lives in Virginia with her husband and two children. Ever since she was young, Lydie Wilkes was often found completely submerged in the worlds of Dickens, Louisa May Alcott, Sweet Valley High, and Nancy Drew. She later went on to earn a bachelor degree in English with a concentration in creative writing from Franklin University. The following is taken from her anthology titled Can You Catch My Flow? The arrival of the monarch. With our short lives, hopeful for the next destination, we flap our wings and await the storm. Simple but powerful. She states that poetry, if we let it and embrace it, can offer us a way to empathise with one another. In its immediacy, poetry is a counsellor helping us to understand one another, leading us away from hate to love, from violence to mercy and pity. And finally, I would like us to consider the manner in which poetry can help to connect us to the natural world. These poems help us to focus on aspects of our environment and to develop a sense of awe about them. In Julia Baird's latest novel, Phosphorescence, she encourages us to find awe in some aspect of our environment each day as one method of maintaining a healthy attitude towards facing whatever challenges we may have to deal with. And so I chose this poem that might fit the theme. The poem is from the Australian renowned poet Dorothea McKellar, who is renowned for her I Love a Sunburned Country. Apart from this poem being seasonably applicable, I believe it's an example of connecting us to the wider world, an example of the awe that we can find in nature. It's titled Australian Autumn. On the screen there you can see her I Love a Sunburned Country, but I'm not reading that one today. Australian Autumn. This is the gentlest season of the year. From mist of pearl and gold to slow sweet hours unfold to crystal-like colours, still as grass, but not as chill. All birds speak softly in the autumn bush. One bellbird from the deep, like a call heard in sleep, chimes. In the bronze-gold gloom, cool green-hood orchids bloom. Brown leaves are withering on the alien trees. The metal of our hills is veiled with blue that fills the spirit with a bright sense of intrinsic light. Now that the dew has vanished, sheep lie down by companies content in wilga shade and scent. The reaper sounds nearby like the cicada's cry. And so the mellow day flows on to dusk, and loveliness that grows with skies of mauve and rose, while fragrant smoke plumes lie subtle as memory, curled round our hearts in this still, jewelled air, risen from the pulsing fire, many-hued like desire. Overhead stars blaze white, superb in frosty night. This is the kindliest season of the year. The sun's gold arrows all have lost their barbs. Thick fall the berries ripe, and still each bird may have its fill. Now peace and plenteous have spread their wings. After the blessed rains on autumn hills and plains, we too give thanks and bless this southland's graciousness. Poetry is a bridge, and I believe can assist us in our spiritual journey to become better people and help us to bring a change to the world that is so desperately needed now. Creating a world less about tearing each other down and apart and more about coming together, helping us to realise that we're not as different as we think, and despite our differences, we're not alone in our grief, pain, joy, or happiness. Reading and writing poetry, as well as participating in music, whether by composing, performing, or appreciation, is, I believe, for the greater good. The benefits doing this are strongly connected to the rebuilding and forging of a more connected and a caring world. Finally, some closing words. Go in peace. Let us go in peace, ascribing worth to all that is worthy in life, with hearts warmed by our fellowship with each other, encouraged and supported in facing the challenges which confront us, and filled with the energy, enthusiasm, and compassion which are to be found in our community of faith. Go in peace with hopes revived to live fully in a troubled world. So be it.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.